CliffCentral.com.
That's it. It is Tuesday morning. It's the 11th of May, CliffCentral.com. We're in the midst of winter. There's no denying it. You'll know that if you get out of bed this morning and you just feel it. In fact, it's the easiest way to wake up is to just take your blankets off and just lie there and realize, oh no.
Freezing.
No, I'll tell you what, that's what I did today. It got me the hell out of bed quickly. So
that's torture.
Yeah, we were talking about emails this morning, and we were talking about how you should run your life according to some rules. You can make your own rules. Everybody has different, you know, settings that they prefer to put into their, you know, WhatsApps or their emails. Some people don't have certain things on devices. It got into a whole conversation, but Woody wants to throw this in before we carry on. Woody says, another thing about emails, working in a big company where an email is sent out to the entire company and you get those idiots who reply to all instead of the relevant people. I hate that. I also think that if there isn't a job for someone to do when you copy them, don't copy them. Like, if you're just copying someone to cover your backside, that is pointless. Oh, okay. I mean, if they don't have something to do as a result of, you know, getting on that email thread, don't copy them. I don't want to be copied on emails that I don't have anything I have to do with. It's a waste of my time and of yours. And frankly, we should all just stop filling each other's inbox with bullshit. I've told you, I go through...
Corporate 101.
I told you, I go through... I actually find all those spam emails, and I actually go and unsubscribe manually from each of those. At least once every 2 months or whatever, I'll go through all of them, because I put them in a folder, then I go through all of them, and I click on the link, and I unsubscribe from every single one, and it does help. It clears up a lot of the crap, because there's been a fortune, especially during lockdown, so many bullshit spam emails. I'm sure you've got them too.
Talking about corporate 101, I saw this video and it reminded me of you, Gareth, and how you were lamenting about corporate speak.
Yes.
And this is, they call this every conference call you've ever been on. I couldn't agree more.
Oh, I hate those.
Hey guys, can you hear me? No, cool, it's Terry. Yeah, real fast. Why don't I hop on and touch base and close the loop here? I have a hard stop at 12, so I want to be cognizant of everyone's time. So as a quick level set, and I want to put this on everyone's radar, and you may want to keep this in your back pocket, I'm going to piggyback off your first point. We're in a very unique position right now to launch this whole thing at scale, so I want to make sure we're striking while the iron is hot and gathering all that low-hanging fruit and not burning the candle at both ends, even though bandwidth is low, because we want to get shit done, and done is better than perfect. So we're going to need all hands on deck and boots on the ground, and those boots do need to be in lockstep, because we're not saving lives here, but our lives do depend on it. So if anyone has any questions for me, that's about it. So feel free to ping me, circle back with me, keep me in the loop. My door's always open. Oh, it looks like we all just got 5 minutes back.
But that's all that stuff. I hate it so much. Oh, it's horrible.
He said a whole lot without saying anything.
Nothing at all.
What is their agenda, Chief? Nothing. Like, what are we doing? Nothing.
I love those people on those conference calls or those Zoom calls, and they're not even on video, and they're muted most of the time, and then they'll suddenly come in and go, yes. You'll be like, what? You haven't said
anything. Where did you come from?
You haven't said anything the whole call, and then suddenly their video will come on, and they'll be like, yes. You're like, thank you so much for your contribution. I don't know how we made it through this call up to now without you. It's so incredible that you've joined us. Bullshit.
No, they're just making sure that you guys know that they're there, you know, that their presence is felt, and that, you know, you can mark the register and be like, oh, see, I was here. He was actually listening. Okay.
Is it something? At least there's something. I was in... I count it as it was one of the highlights of my week last week. Such a hilarious meeting. Mm-hmm. And I know he's listening, so I'm not naming and shaming you, Temba. I'm just noting it because it was really funny. I had a meeting with Temba and his team. They work for a very reputable and great corporate brand we're hoping to do business with. So, you know, that's why I'm just saying
All
nice
right.
things.
Okay.
But we log on to a virtual meeting, and I'm just so accustomed now to always having my camera on for virtual meetings, and I don't care whether or not you have your camera on. Mm-hmm. I will just have mine on to put you at ease or whatnot.
Yeah, sure.
And so I found that because I have mine on, some people have the pressure now to have to put their cameras on. So Timber says to the rest of his team, "Oh, well, guys, just put your cameras on then." And his team's good. No, I'm not ready.
Because they're probably half dressed and they haven't fixed their hair and they've got like, yeah.
They flat out said, no. I'm not ready.
But what is the etiquette if someone
being honest.
So if somebody else is on and talking, should your camera also be on? I mean, I think I agree with Sia. Like, if you're going to be in a meeting, you're in a meeting, right? You may as well see each other. As long as nobody has crappy internet, you should be able to see each other and hear each other all the time.
Quite frankly, I also do it for myself.
Yeah.
Just my own attention. If my camera's off and I know that you aren't paying attention to me, then I start to doze off and I sidetrack, but I'm not focused and
I agree.
You know, alert. So I actually do it more for myself more than other people.
Yeah. So Justice agrees with all of us. Corporate speak, say nothing in so many useless words. Yawn fest. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then this is interesting feedback. We had Dr. Hanan on yesterday, and he was a real hit. I mean, people have been emailing us saying how much they loved it. So Kapamba says, "I never listen in live. I start work late, so I listen to the podcast. Because of that, I don't usually message in. I came on to say having Dr. Hanan on was really one of the best things you've done yet." Yeah, we're gonna see if we can get him on regularly. But thank you for that, Kapamba.
Cool name, by the way.
Mm.
Kapamba.
Kapamba.
Like it.
So yeah, interesting about what we're doing is like the live YouTube show is growing, you know, a little bit every week. But our podcast audience I mentioned during lockdown was like it doubled. So we've got lots of new people who've come on board, and I just want to welcome everybody who's joined us this year because we, you know, as you know, we turned 7 years old 2 Saturdays ago, and it's quite a big deal for us. It's always nice when new people join the party and where you could be part of our little community. So welcome if you're new, and it's sometimes necessary just to remind ourselves that there are always new people joining in, and that's always good. We love everybody. Once you become part of this, you kind of can't leave. I'm sorry, it's you give us your you give us your soul. You're not allowed to leave.
Welcome to the show. My name is Sia. I'm pure, virginal, and love Jesus
and money.
Hi, Sia.
Yeah.
Not obsessed by the material things of
no,
the world.
Not at all. So
give me a Bible and I'm yours.
today's one thing for the week. We've kind of built up to this in the discussion earlier, but today you're going to actually answer some spam emails. So just take one or two, and it could even be a call from, you know, if you're like me, you've got Truecaller on your phone, and you sometimes get those spam calls and you never answer them. Well, today you're going to answer one spam call. You're going to answer one email on spam, and you're actually going to reply with like a whole thing. So you must tell them your whole story. You must be like, "Oh, I'm so glad you emailed me," because it'll freak them the hell out, right? So if it's like you've just won 5,500 million rand in the European Lotto, and I'm trying to get hold of you, but I'm a lawyer in Nigeria, blah blah blah. So you must go, "Oh, I'm so glad you got hold of me today, because my mom is very sick and I really need that money. And if you can please give me your bank details, then, you know, I'll get hold of you. And please tell me where you live and tell me what you're up to. And tell me about your family, because I'm really interested in you." And just burn them out completely. Like, make it a long ass email so that they have to read the whole thing. It'll take you a while, but it'll be worth it. Be creative. Really mess with them.
Reverse psychology. Yeah. I see where you're going, Chris.
And try it.
And
if someone calls you from a call center or whatever, you know, look, I know they don't love their jobs either, and they've got to be among the most hated people in the world, because that is a horrible, thankless job to work in a call center. But today, maybe be nice to them. Like when they phone you, you go, "Hi. Oh, I've been waiting for this call all day. So tell me about your family. Tell me about where you live. Tell me about what kind of a job. How did you get this job? Where did you work before this? Do it. I mean, it'll take you 5-10 minutes of your day, but you never know. It might just, you might just make the person laugh. Who knows?
By the way, I tried last week's one thing for the week, and I gave up halfway. You know, so the task was to invite someone into your home, or like,
or just do something nice to them in the street, or what happened?
I tried to strike up a conversation with one of the garden service people here in our complex.
Yeah.
And I went up to him, and he was high as a kite. Oh, he was.
So he didn't need you.
There was not much of a conversation to be had there.
Yeah,
after that, I walked away, and I now second guess every time I hear the lawnmower going on for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I think, is he now fully aware of what he's doing, or has he zoned out just with the thing? He's out of it. As soon as I could, his eyes were glazed. It was so red. He kept on calling me my guy. My guy. How are you? My guy.
That's so great.
Abort mission.
Well, I'm proud of you for at least trying, Sia. I mean, you did your best. Well done.
He would have had the munchies. He would have needed more than a glass of water. He would have needed a lot to quench whatever was going on with him.
He would have eaten you out of house and home if you'd let him in. So just as well you didn't. Mm-hmm. All right, so I want to talk about this because Sharon Osbourne was fired from The Talk a while ago. Remember, that's at that talk show with all those yenters that get around the table and they yak each other's brains out. Well, I mean, like, it's sort of like the View. It's another version of The View. So you either were a Talk fan or you're a View fan. So since Sharon Osbourne has left, apparently The Talk, the ratings have just plummeted. They've gone all-time lows. Nobody's watching The Talk since Sharon Osbourne left. This is the problem. You know, ultimately, you have to have a business model. So no matter how much people didn't like Sharon Osbourne or did like Sharon Osbourne, all these woke people who said she must be canceled because she supported Piers Morgan, and by supporting Piers Morgan, she's a racist because Piers Morgan was a racist because he was criticizing Meghan Markle, because Meghan Markle is like a little bit browner than me and a little bit less brown than Sian Simpiwe. You know, this is all such bullshit. So what's happened is that the Talk is tanked completely. Now all those women on The Talk are going to see their backsides and get paid less, and they're probably going to get fired from The Talk, which is probably just desserts because they're the ones who ganged up on Sharon. So wah is what I say. Wah.
Oh.
I'm not complaining. No. I think there's far too many talk shows.
Right.
And they're all the same. Right. The View, The Talk, The Real. If we lose this one, I'm not mad. I'm not complaining.
Can you imagine how Sharon Sharon is loving this, sitting at him, Ozzy, how old you wear? Ozzy, they're such bitches, Ozzy. I always hated those bitches. I hope they go down in flames.
She's
getting on the phone to Piers Morgan. Piers, their show's a fuck up. Loving it. Yeah.
As a bit of a side note, she's been posting photos of Ozzy here and there. What is he suffering from? It slipped my mind, but he has some sort of debilitating disorder. Okay. So he's
he's been a disaster. Slowly, I hate to say it, but Ozzy's been a disaster for 20 years.
There was one photo. Let me see if I can find it over the course of this conversation. She posted of Ozzy. He was unrecognizable.
Okay. You know,
without a heavy set glasses, and he doesn't look drunk. That's kind of Ozzy's trademark look. He didn't look drunk.
No, see if you can find a picture of that, because I don't believe Ozzy's necessarily, to the untrained eye, got much worse. He was always a bit of a mess. I mean, he could hardly You know, he used to shake, he used to sit there, and he was addled by all the drugs and alcohol over years. So even if he's got a disease, if he's got some disease now, I mean, you'd need a doctor to actually tell you that, because Ozzy looked pretty screwed up by the last time I checked him out. Remember, they used to have that. They
wouldn't even need a second glance. Like, I needed a third and fourth glance. Go, actually, wait, that's Ozzy Osbourne. I'll try and find it.
Weren't the Osbournes the original celebrity reality show TV? A reality TV show. They were the original people to put their whole lives on camera, long before the Kardashians, mm-hmm. right? And there was the one daughter, Amy, who never wanted to be part of the show. So she kind of lived her life outside of the spotlight. And even though she was in the house, nobody ever filmed her or involved her in anything. And it was Sharon, and it was... There were the two fat children.
Jack
and what's the other one?
Kelly,
that's right. And then Ozzy, and he'd sort of stumble around the house going, Sharon! I don't know where... Sharon, I don't know where I put my fucking glasses. Somewhere around the outside. Remember, that was such a stupid
show. You're right.
That was such a stupid show, but I watched a bit of that. I watched more of that than I watched any subsequent reality shows. It was good. The Osbournes.
So good. And it was real. That's the thing. Oh, here's this photo. Here's this photo of Ozzy.
No.
Am I the only one?
He looks better. He doesn't look bad.
Oh, wow. He looks decent. He looks clean, like he took a bath.
Yeah. But that is what I'm saying. He doesn't look drunk.
No, he's obviously...
And now without the dye in his hair, wouldn't you trust him to go and pick up your kids at school? Or wouldn't you trust him at the bake sale? Because he looks like a little grandfather coming in, you know, to read for the kids.
Well, I'm amazed. I mean,
he cleans up well, hey?
He doesn't look bad at all.
Wow.
I think
he's in his 70s now. You know, Sharon is 68. He's in his 70s.
He looked worse with those little round glasses and the long black hair and, you know, wandering around, bumping into things. I think he's in a much worse state than there. He looks quite, you know, he looks respectable. Good for him.
So back to Sharon. There are 30...
Yeah.
Sia's just frozen. No, Sharon, I can't hear Sia. Go back to you, Sia.
I was going to say sorry. I broke up a little there. Sorry.
Yeah, go on. Back to the top.
There are like there are 13 top ranking U.S. talk shows.
Yeah.
And The Talk, which Sharon was on, used to really be up there, and now it has actually slipped to the 13th spot, and it averages just about 1 million viewers a day, which is basically nothing in comparison to the other talk shows. And this is all after Sharon left.
So who else?
I mean, she did have the spice.
She did. Well, I mean...
She had the personality and the kracht to like tell people where to get off. I'm not surprised. Well, I'm actually not surprised.
Katu Kat says it's because Sharon was the most real person on there. She didn't try to impress anyone. She was just herself. Yeah, I think that's...
Well, now that I...
Kind of what Tim was saying.
Also just... Yeah, kind of being honest as well is you sometimes like watching certain things or listening to certain things with people you don't like so that you can have more of a reason to not like them.
Yeah.
To go, Sharon said. Oh, you know, Sharon, how stupid is she? But now you're agreeing with everyone, so it's not really exciting.
But also, I mean, wasn't Sharon like the biggest star on that show? Because the rest of them aren't really well known. They're not as famous as she is, and nobody really cares, you know, if any of them get replaced. Because even on The View, I mean, it used to be Barbara Walters. Now it's probably Whoopi Goldberg, who's the most famous person on there. If Whoopi goes, then what do they got? They got that, who's that old crow? That's it, Joy Behar. God, talk about giving you kidney stones. That woman, she is absolutely abominable, Joy Behar.
She's had such a tough time with lockdown. She can't manage her mics and her camera falls.
She's been a disaster for for 15 years. She's a disaster, that Joy Behar. I don't know how that, where the hell she crawled out from. She's got all these opinions and absolutely bugger all knowledge about anything. Anyway, I mean, so without Whoopi, I don't think The View would work either, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because who are the others?
It can also go. It can just ship them off. The View, The Talk.
Yeah,
see, maybe The Real. I don't know. It's been a minute since I've watched The Real.
Sabira, you know,
kind of losing its flavor, so it can also just chips.
You wouldn't miss any of these shows if they all went off TV, right?
I wouldn't. I mean, when The Real started, I was there for Tamar and how she was like, girl, I'm gonna tell y'all, you know, this business. I loved that. She was just like, I'm keeping it real, not today.
Garrett,
The Real
is basically the younger version of The Real. Right. That's what it is.
Now, I've seen an episode or two of that. I know which one you mean.
Yeah, so I don't know. They can all go. The Talk, The Real, The View.
Please, anything is a younger version of The View. Us having this conversation is a younger version of The View. Those people, between them, the only reason they shipped Barbara Walters out and back into her apartment was because she could no longer tell where the hell she was. I mean, like, there is no retirement age on The View. They just keep you, keep you on there until you start to turn to dust. Then they eventually wheel you away. It's ridiculous.
Man. Oh, okay. So can I highlight just two random court cases that happened in South Africa that I sort of actually want to keep tabs of? Mm. Well, the third one isn't as exciting, but the first two are really intriguing to me. So the first one, this man appeared in court yesterday, and I hate to say this, but I think they might listen to the show, and this is what influenced their crime.
Our show.
Yes. So I think maybe we could be accomplices here. A 45-year-old Fidelity security guard appeared in court yesterday because he allegedly, we still have to use the word allegedly since it's in process, allegedly loaded millions of rands into his own personal, very civilian, innocent-looking car, and that's how he stole the money. How isn't that what you always say about how they should transport cash?
Yeah, but I mean, that's not the most original idea we've ever had. But yeah, sure. I mean, maybe they're listening to us. Who knows?
Maybe.
Okay.
And he has been on the run since April the 5th. And he was recently found and only appeared in court on Monday, so that was yesterday.
Okay.
What I admire as well about the story is there were three of them in total as part of this plan, and the other two did not snitch on him. So the other two were going to actually try to make a dash for it in an armored van, but they were quickly caught. Very silly. But this 45-year-old, on his own, he loaded millions of money into his car, into his boots, and you know, just around the seat. You wouldn't exactly notice it. He actually drove out and had been on the run for it. Good for them for not snitching on the other one.
Yeah, but so they...
All I have to say is they clearly not from the East Rand. That's why the job is botched. That's all.
Yeah, the East Rand people would never screw this up. They'd get away with the money. But they did eventually catch him.
I hate to say this. He did appear in the Kempton Park Magistrates Court.
No! He's letting my people down. Okay, we don't know him. We're not taking claim for this man. He botched the job. I'm sorry. No. On behalf of all the people from the East Rand, he's not one of ours. No.
All right.
No.
Well, we just want to be clear that this show has had no role in giving ideas to these crooks. I'm going to make that very clear.
Perhaps.
No, it's not our responsibility.
It isn't clear yet just how much money, A, he originally made off with, and B, how much money he spent. Because all they say for now is he went off with millions of rands. And then they say the remaining amount of money was returned back to the company. So who knows how much he spent and what he actually did with it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, listen, good for him. What's the other case? You said there were two.
Yeah, this one is quite eerie, but also how do things escalate this much? A chairperson of a school governing body also appeared in court yesterday after stabbing a man to death during a school governing body meeting at a primary school on Friday.
Yes, sis, that school's got serious things to discuss if they're willing to stab each other over a governing body meeting. My God.
Oh, sorry. Correction. He didn't die, but it was a scuffle and he stabbed
him. Oh, my God. Doesn't make it any better. You know, imagine being so angry in a governing body meeting at your children's school, primary school, no less, that you decide it's okay to stab someone. Yes, sis.
That's what confuses me. What happened at a governing body meeting for you to get so worked up? It's not a political rally. Mm-mm. It's not you were at the bank and maybe someone stole money from you at a governing body meeting. I hate to sound insensitive, but what's the most that happened? You guys were debating over the new tuck shop prices.
Yeah, they were trying to elect the new deputy chairperson and, you know, got into who knows? It's ridiculous. Sure. I mean, I've heard stories about like kids' soccer matches at school where the parents will get aggressive with each other because, you know, the kid, you know, the referee made a decision or whatever. I mean, this is at school. If you're the kind of parent who's willing to stab another parent over a governing body meeting or a school sport or whatever, you maybe shouldn't really be a parent. I'm just saying. You're probably not filling your kid's head with the right stuff at home. Maybe that kid's got a very low chance of succeeding in life because you're a shit parent. I mean, really, a governing body meeting? Listen, I know these meetings can get out of control, but to stab someone, yes, that's unreal, right?
Yeah.
And this man was 43 years old and stabbed a 22-year-old.
Yes.
Oh, you are angry. You're very angry, Chief. You must fix your life. Like, go heal.
That's just
a whole lot of anger.
Well, we've got a lot of angry people in this country, and then they're just looking for an excuse to become physically violent as well. So that's why you got to be careful in traffic. I mean, we can laugh about this, but
absolutely,
man, you know, you get cross with someone in traffic, and you like, you go, fuck you, or whatever, and then that person has got like a cricket bat or a gun or a shambok or something in their car, and they get out, and you know, you don't want to be in that situation. Just be nice. Just be nice to everybody. You never know how crazy or what's happened in someone's life that could drive them over the edge, and then you just happen to be the person near them. They take it out on you. I'll bet you that person who was stabbed, they thought, I'll go to this governing body meeting. I'll be home in time for supper. Didn't work out that way. It's like in the ER. Not good. Not good at all.
Scary stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll get to blind history in a moment or two. Exciting. Today is the Vikings, which is probably one of the most requested topics. I've been watching the series again. I've spoken about this a couple of times on the show this morning, most mornings. But the Vikings are just such an interesting chapter in history. And we tried to condense as much information into an episode as possible, but it's so full. There's so many characters. There's so much you could tell about the Vikings. And we thought better to do like a little crash course in the Vikings. We could always pick up on one or two of the major Viking leaders or some of the interesting facts about them later on. But I think you'll like this episode very much. It's coming up in a little while. I didn't know, but people still collect autographs. And apparently Elon Musk's autograph is now the best-selling autograph in the world. So this is the, you know, signature. He signs things. And Elon Musk's autograph is now the most valuable autograph in the world. Did you know about this?
Do you even have an autograph from someone famous?
No.
I personally don't, but my sister used to have like a book.
Really?
And every time she went to, she had like a flippy book, whatever.
Yeah.
And it had autographs of, there we go. And it had like it had autographs of all the celebrities she's met over the years. And she would carry that. Like if she met a celeb in the mall, she'd be like, hi, how are you? I'm such a huge fan. Can you please sign my book? And they would sign. And she did that until her late 20s. I don't know where it is now.
Oh, wow.
But she used to have it.
That's a, well, listen, yeah. Points to her for being disciplined enough to carry around an autograph book the whole time. I mean, it used to be a thing. Yeah, it was something to prove. Before we had phones and we could take pictures with famous people or people we admired or respected or were interested in, now, obviously, the phone has taken the place of the autograph, but it is still a thing. Apparently, Elon Musk's autograph is now selling for an average of $4,000. But if you manage to get a toy Tesla, like a toy version of a Tesla car, and he signed that, that could get you up to $20,000 on eBay. Wow.
So this is all part of his appearance on Saturday Night Live over the weekend. And I didn't know this, but it seems like there's a bit of like a autograph collectors, and it's a bit of a club.
Sure.
People who long to get someone's autograph.
Right.
But also it's a bit of a savvy business thing where people will specifically, like in Elon's case, people were specifically waiting around the NBC studios with Tesla merchandise, with toy Tesla cars to get him to sign it, and then they go and they sell it on eBay. So they're making money out of it. And yeah, on average, Elon Musk's signature alone, this is just on a piece of paper,
right,
would go for $4,000.
Yeah.
That's more than, with my rough maths, more than 40,000 rand.
That's a lot of money.
And then to pay $20,000
for the
if
toy,
it's signed on a Tesla toy car.
I mean, is there anyone in the world whose autograph you would really want that you'd be willing to pay even $100 for?
No.
No?
No. Sorry, yeah. No.
Anyone in the world that
it's
you'd
a signature
pay for?
Yeah. That I must pay for? No, sorry.
So, yeah,
nope, that's not
I understand. I'm with Simpiwe. But then we do this Collectomania every Monday, and they're probably going to be some autograph collectors at some point on that show. And, you know, you can collect autographs of people who are already dead. Those are probably worth more than people who are alive. I think maybe it would be nice to have like a, I don't know, a Michael Jackson or a Freddie Mercury or something like that signed on a, you know, on like a T-shirt that you bought at their concert. That would be cool. But that's very old school. You know, I think I'd rather have a picture with them, frankly. And you know, before you had to have a camera and blah blah blah. Now you just have your phone and you can get everything. So I think phones have replaced autographs.
Yeah, more than an autograph, I'd value something that I could use. You know, if it's an item that so and so owned, that would be great. But an actual autograph, then what do you do with it? Unless also it's not really, would it be something that you'd frame? You know, I was thinking about this. Because in Durban you were very limited with who you saw.
Yeah.
I only collected autographs from two sets of people, which is now laughable.
Who?
The first, I was struggling to remember his name yesterday when I was thinking about this. He was a continuity presenter on SABC 3.
Who?
I think his name was like Brian or Brian Gamma or something. And I remember seeing him and I thought, oh my gosh!
The only
celebrity I've ever met.
Yeah, well, I mean, just, imagine.
And he signed something for me on a receipt.
Imagine the people.
That was sad.
Imagine the people in PE. I mean, everyone's a celebrity in PE. If you've, you know, if you've been on the news, you're like in PE. You're like hero. You know, that's what people are.
And then the only like, I guess, typical boyish thing that I was ever into as a child.
Yeah.
Were the MTN Gladiators. Do you remember those?
I remember those guys.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Oh,
sure.
Oh, yes.
Like so I remember they signed a backpack of mine, and I was so chuffed. I went
back you're
to
such a cool
with
kid,
it, like, look at me.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, they had like a signing session at a mall in Durban, and they're all like signed on my backpack.
That's
now
cool.
For the life of me, I can't even remember one of their names, but I remember the whole show though.
Listen, I mean, I don't think I have any autographs. Trying to think. I've got a very old lithograph, which is you know what they used to do before we had pictures, and it's a lithograph of Napoleon that was signed by him in like 1804. That's pretty cool. But I mean,
sorry, what's a lithograph?
A lithograph, it's sort of like a plate that they would engrave, and then they'd make various versions of this, and then someone actually engraves the plate, and so it was an early form of a reproduction, almost like a photocopy, and it's got his real signature in ink underneath it. That's pretty cool. But I mean, I don't count that as an autograph. That's like a piece of historical memorabilia, you know. Autograph is like someone who's either alive now or has been alive recently. That's how I'd think about it. But there's no one really I'd collect that. That's not an interesting thing to me. It's not as I can understand why other people would be into it. It's not my thing. But there we are. So the most expensive autograph before Elon Musk was Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber.
Baby.
Exactly.
Justin Bieber.
He was before Elon Musk, he was the guy who everyone wanted an autograph from. So there, now you've learned something useful today.
Yeah, the other in the top three is BTS, which is this K-pop group.
Oh, right.
So
I've
out of my
some of their music.
You listen to BTS?
No, a bit. Like, I had a friend who was really obsessed about them and made us listen to one or two of their songs. Not bad. Their visuals for their music videos on point. Like, I could eat that up all day, every day. But music-wise and listening to it, not for me.
Well, someone's saying here, if Sia didn't say Oprah, then there's something wrong. So you wouldn't even want an Oprah autograph?
No, an Oprah something else. But just an autograph, what would I do with it? What would I, yeah.
Well, Lizanne says, Sia, you didn't even value the Oprah chair enough to buy it. So what do you know about collecting? That's right.
Lizanne, it's a sore point.
Pichleng says, back in high school, I had A.B. de Villiers' autograph on a piece of paper, and I valued that thing. My mom used the paper to start some fire, and I didn't speak to her.
your mom is a G. Yo. Your mom is a G. She's like, paper, start fire now. What's a crap for who?
Steph just reminded me, because I'd forgotten about who was the host of the Gladiators, was Glenn Hicks. He was the guy who actually like emceed all the fights in inverted commas. I mean, they weren't really fights. Everybody was they were wearing these cushioned helmets and these cushions that was always in soft arenas, and like it wasn't really that dangerous. It was ridiculous.
But they looked so tough.
That is quite a bit.
Yeah. No,
I fell for the whole line.
Blast from the past.
The storyline, and I fell for it. Yes.
All right.
Gladiators can do no wrong in my eyes.
I hate to cut this conversation to a close, but we've got to get to Blind History for this morning. Blind History this morning featuring the Vikings, a really interesting chapter in human history. These fearsome Northmen, the violence, the strength, the ferocity. I mean, we've tried to squeeze it all into one episode for you today. And they've even made a contribution to the language we use. Words like pillage and ransack come from the Vikings. Their gods, their society, their women, sophistication, every bit as crucial as their raids. And we're finding out more about the Vikings every day because they keep uncovering these Viking hordes, which are the treasure troves that they would bury. So they'd go and raid, you know, some place on the French coast or in England, and then they'd take it back to Scandinavia and bury it. And we're still discovering every day more and more of this stuff, which is incredible. So here it is, The Vikings and Blind History. We're into season 5, and this is episode 5. It's moving so quickly, my God, can't believe it. More to come. There's plenty of good stuff with Blind History still on the way. Here is The Vikings. The idyllic peace of the Lindisfarne Monastery was broken by the panicked ringing of the abbey's bell. Emerging from the mist on the North Sea, a fleet of flat-bottomed boats brought grave danger. Terrifying pagans, a horde of bedeviled, tattooed, axe-wielding berserkers from the cold north, there to plunder and to murder. For hundreds of years, Northern Europe would wait in fear for the next Viking raid, never sure if God would spare them. Now, if you Google Vikings, you'll find a TV series about a man called Ragnar Lothbrok. And this guy was supposedly a famous Viking in history. And there's another series called Norsemen, which is a comedy, as opposed to Vikings, which is a drama. And the irony is that Vikings may have been much more like the comedy series than they were like the drama series, in that these people have only just recently come to light as being a lot more cultural and sophisticated, artistic, creative, agriculturally ahead of their time, exploration geniuses. And all of this has really only come to light since the mid to late 1800s. But when people hear the word Viking, unfortunately what you see is Hagar the Horrible, battle axes, and pillaging, raping, and ruining all of Europe. So we're going to talk about the Vikings, and it's hard to squeeze all of this into one episode, but Anthony Miederer and I have done our best to try and compile a list of the most interesting Viking leaders and some of the stories about the Vikings, which I think will make you interested, and perhaps you can go and find more information if you like it yourself, and let us know if you've got something that you'd like us to focus on in future episodes. But really, there was no doubt that the Viking contribution to civilization is enormous. There was even a Viking age, which was somewhere between 700 and 1000 AD.
I enjoyed it. This hit the sweet spot for me because I've always loved the Roman Empire.
Mm.
And if you look at this, the Viking Empire in certain cases, you know, is comparable. Mm. The impact that they had on Europe, on the British Isles, and what they did in Greenland and Iceland, it was incredible. And I loved researching it. You know, I have to really concentrate because there's a lot that happened in 200 or 300 years in the time that they had the two eras, as they call it.
Well, let's begin with the origins of the Viking people, mostly from Scandinavia, modern Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Finland. And they were really survivors in the beginning. They were small-scale farmers. They never really had kings. They had different tribes and different chiefs, and those chiefs were completely independent of each other. And if they could, they would fight with each other and take over each other's tribes and amalgamate, but they never really had one king. And for a very long time, they were opportunists. As soon as the land ran out, and they weren't in a particularly fertile or warm part of the world, so there was only so much land you could farm, they realized the next best thing to do was to build ships. And these were incredible feats of engineering, actually. These ships were shallow, they were quite long, they could go up rivers, they could go into rough international waters.
Overlapping, so special, that clinker overlapping boards that made them waterproof.
Absolutely.
And then quick.
Very quick. And they realized that if they hopped on these ships, they could take opportunistic raids in various other places of the world, and they could just loot the places. And the obvious targets at that stage of the world were probably the monasteries, because Europe was in the Dark Ages, but the monasteries were these beacons of light, and they all had lots of silver and lots of other treasures and plenty of people that could be carried back as slaves. Mm.
You know, that just talking about why did they move, so you mentioned the fact that they ran out of space, so that's one of the reasons. But a big reason was Charlemagne was very effective. He was the Roman emperor, and he did a very good job, let's say, of getting Christians and converting. And he did tackle the northern Germans, they weren't called
Frisians.
The Frisians, and for that matter, the Northmen. And it was quite aggressive. There was one story about the spiritual tree that they had in Norway, and they came in and burnt it down, and I think they were very aggrieved. So that played a part. And then political instability. All of those things became a melting pot, and then opportunism, as you're talking about, said, well, look, we're gonna go and find some booty.
Well, as soon as Charlemagne died, really there was everything broke down in Europe, and the kingdoms all deteriorated in size and power, and the Vikings also saw an opportunity. Plus, the monasteries, which, as I mentioned earlier, were rich, were also not particularly well defended. You know, monks are not soldiers, and it's much easier to kill 10 monks than it is to kill 10 soldiers. They would land at places like Lindisfarne in England, and it would just be a massacre.
But the monks and the monasteries never expected anybody to attack them, because all the wars that had previously, I mean, they were the Christians. They said, look, let's not take on the house of God or whatever it might have been.
There was like religious respect, but the Vikings didn't care.
Yeah, I mean,
that. These
were like Hagar, you know, let's take all the wine, the wine and the women.
Right, and they did. I mean, they famously, they would go in with battle axes. You can picture them while I'm saying it. These two kind of bladed battle axes, swords, big shields, they wore horns on their heads. They did have all of that going for them, and they must have been frightening. Then they'd capture all the people. They'd take all the women back, because women were in short supply. They would die young. They would die in childbirth. You know, Norway was very cold and not particularly hospitable. And they'd take back women from all over the world and rape them and then produce children with them and keep them as slaves.
And also what they used to do is if somebody had passed away that was a high standing in the church, they used to see that this was very important to the people in that particular monastery, and they used to kidnap that corpse take that back so they could embezzle money out, whatever you want to call it. They took the corpse for ransom, along with, like you mentioned, the women and the children. So why they were so scary is because the Christians thought they were looking straight into the devil's eye. Mm-hmm. But their religions weren't far apart later on, as you see.
No, I mean, they believed in most of the Norse mythology that has come down to us, you know, Odin and Thor and Freya and all those famous gods and goddesses. And they had a sophisticated system of mythology. They also had sophisticated family structures. They had interesting little villages. They had feasts and halls and all the things that you'd expect Vikings to have.
Yeah.
And they were, I suppose, also the founders of whole languages and communities which have existed to this very day. But if you were some terrified priest and you saw those sails on the horizon, man, you would run and scream and hide and try to get the hell out of there.
Yeah. And then you needed somebody like Alfred the Great.
Yes.
To go and stand up. I know there's a bigger story to that, but, you know, he was one of the very few, especially in those early years, that stood up and actually fought against them.
Well, one of the most famous early Vikings was this Ragnar, and even the French chroniclers wrote stories about him. He apparently was so audacious that he even managed to command a fleet of some few hundred ships to go up the Seine River from the Atlantic, from the English Channel, effectively, all the way to Paris. They threatened Paris, took on the armies there. The king, Charles the Bald, was so afraid that just to get rid of them, he gave them 6,000 pounds of silver to just go away. And then, of course, what happened was they got the 6,000 pounds of silver.
Strategically, that wasn't a good move.
And then they thought,
if
we can get 6,000 pounds of silver, we can probably get some more.
Yeah,
so they kept doing it. And they went with these boats upriver into most of Europe. And unfortunately for everybody in Europe, Europe is fairly navigable by river. So the Vikings, this was like they'd hit the jackpot.
Yeah. In the beginning, they used to do these quick hit and runs because, like you'd mentioned earlier, they weren't necessarily patriotic and one country. So they had these small forces, and the fact that Ragnar had 100 or more ships shows you what charisma he had. And he could probably drink better than anybody, could fight better than anybody, because that's what pulled them together.
Right.
But what they did was, after the hit and runs, they thought, well, we need to overwinter somewhere because this is really lucrative after Lindisfarne and those raids. So they used to overwinter, and then around April, May, they used to start how they were going to collect all their booty.
Their raids.
Yeah. And they did it in the Seine near the mouth. Yeah. They did it on the northeast coast of England. And even in southern England, they used to just wait. And the people used to watch and say, you know, watch these guys overwinter and be so scared. And the other big thing is they could build an army. So their army was flattened by Alfred. The next summer, they had one twice the size.
Yeah.
So it was incredible how they could
recruit
mobilize
new people.
Yeah.
But they used to travel far as well. I mean, Greenland is famously named Greenland because Eric the Red tried to attract people to it, even though it was mostly ice and snow. Not a very hospitable place.
But it was worse
either than
Iceland, and it's called Greenland.
Correct. And yet, many people went and settled there. There was a very famous Viking community that was established there in the 800s to 900s AD. And his son, Eric's son, Leif Erikson, is supposedly the guy who discovered North America.
Yeah, and he's one of the most famous of the Vikings.
He heard a story about another Viking who was blown off course and ended up in this fabled land to the west. Essentially, these guys opened up the Western Hemisphere to Europe many years before Columbus, at least 500 years before Columbus is supposed to have done it. And there is reputed to have been a village that was populated by Leif Erikson and his family in Newfoundland, in Canada. Which is just
incredible. And they found evidence in the 1960s that it could have been Vikings. He called it Vinland or Vinland because they had wild vines. But there's a big speculation because the area is very cold and they've never had grapes there. So it could have been other types of fruit that they would make into a type of wine. But they stuck around there for a while and they got to know the area. But then they started being watched very carefully and they had a few skirmishes with the local tribes in Canada at the time. So then they left. And they never really settled in that area.
Yeah. I mean, still, if you consider that in the year 1000, these guys had already managed to cross the Atlantic by hopping from Iceland to Greenland.
And it must
Canada.
Have been scary because the North Sea and up north near the Arctic Circle is frightening. I mean, some of the seas that you have up there, even just crossing from Denmark or Norway to the British Isles, it was a massive feat. But what I found interesting, they spread three ways. It was almost like today Sweden was more closer to Russia. Mm-hmm. So then you had the Vikings that settled, or Rus. Also
That's right.
That
Russia's
period.
Named after the Vikings.
Yeah. And then the Norwegians and the Danes, they weren't called that then, but they came into Europe and the British Isles and also across to Iceland. And
they were named the Norsemen and it became the Normans. And the Normans under King Rollo, a famous king of the Norman coast of France, they were eventually the people who conquered England.
Yeah.
When his grandson, I think it was, William the First, conquered England.
Yeah, so great-great-grandson. And I find that incredibly interesting because ultimately, in the end, Alfred, who was a proper English
Anglo-Saxon's
the better word. So he'd managed, and his sons managed to keep it in place, but they weren't as successful as Alfred. And then I think Ethelred the Unready, which is ironic.
That's right.
He lost control again of certain parts of England. On the second wave, you had Canute. Canute came down. He was, if I can remember, it was Harold. Bluetooth.
That's right.
Harold Bluetooth.
These names are great.
The Bluetooth name comes from that. So we talk about Bluetooth on our cell phones. It's Harold, so the H, and then the B, if you look at
that's
the
design. That's right, it's a symbol for Bluetooth.
Exactly.
Harold Bluetooth had Canute or Canute or
Sven,
however
the
you,
Forkbeard right. was the son of Harold Bluetooth, and then his son was Canute. And his son was actually a very, very good English king.
Yeah.
You know, he very competent.
Well, unfortunately for the Vikings, the whole story ends in England as well, because there was a guy called Harald Hardrada, who was the last king to try and conquer England. He'd done really well in Europe. He'd managed to win territories all over Northern Europe, and he was widely feared and respected. And I think he got too ambitious, and he decided to conquer England, landed in Northumbria, and was met by Harold Godwinson, who was already worried because he was going to be attacked from the south by William the Conqueror, his cousin. But he managed to fend them off at Stamford Bridge quite decently. He managed to beat them properly. And Harald Hardrada died in that battle. And that was really the last big gasp of the Viking Empire or the Viking Age. Because after that, through William the Conqueror, obviously, their legacy continued. And their legacy on Earth is enormous. You mentioned their connection to Russia. But the Vikings have had a tremendous influence on Western civilization ever since then.
But even if you look at just Hardrada, so he went into Russia, and then he went down into Constantinople, and he became a mercenary for the Byzantine Emperor.
Yes, that's right.
And he was part of them where they sacked, they thought it was Rome, because that's really what he wanted to do. I can't remember exactly the coastal town that it was.
I think he attacked Sicily at some point.
Sicily.
And he was crafty. What they did is they used to catch birds that lived in the city. They'd catch them outside the city and attach pitch to them and light them on fire. The birds would fly back into the city, into their nests, which were flammable, and set the whole city on fire. And that's how he got them to open the gates eventually.
So it was very, very crafty.
Well, they were definitely frightening, and they were definitely not the people you'd want to meet in open battle. They were brave. They would all hope to go to Valhalla one day, where they could feast with Odin for eternity.
All they really wanted to do was fight and have a big feast. So, and in the
simple
night,
guys.
Yeah, 100%. And in the night, all their injuries would heal. So this is what Valhalla was. All the injuries would heal. The next morning they could fight again and then they'd drink and be healed. And they really were worried because only 50% of the Vikings killed in battle actually went to Valhalla. So the other 50%, that was quite sad. To them it was sad. So they really had to fight hard to get into Valhalla.
It's a really, really interesting history. I mean, we can't fit everything in here. There's so much we could talk about. But the exploration, the raids, the fighting, the fact that they had women warriors as well, yes, which was unknown at the time.
Erik Red's daughter was more brutal than Leif Erikson, or who was his son. She was frightening.
Listen, there were some very, very scary people. Yeah. Tell you what, if you go back in history and you climb in your time machine and you put the date in wrong and you end up in Viking Norway, you're in big trouble. You better be able to fight.
Yeah, but the nice thing is they got to write books, you know. So not only could they do all of those things you mentioned, they've got more detail in their books than any other settlement or country in those times.
No, they definitely, we call it the Dark Ages because for Christianity it was a dark time. But there were other civilizations that were flourishing at that point. And probably the trade in Northern Europe was one of their lasting legacies too. You can find coins, deposits, danegeld, they used to call it, or danegeld, if you want to say it phonetically. And this was money that was stolen on raids, and it comes from all over the world. Mm-hmm. There are coins in there from the Arab world and everywhere. So really, the world is a lot more open than we thought it was.
100%. Brilliant.
These are fascinating people, and we really can't fit it all into one episode. But honestly, the Vikings, what an exciting time in human history, and such powerful people. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. They were berserkers. In fact, the chief soldiers were actually called berserkers, and these people would lose their minds. They'd get very drunk, or they'd get really pumped up and angry, and then they'd just take out all the force that they had on, you know, a poor monastery or an abbey or whatever it was. CliffCentral.com